Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D, and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Simon.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Matteo.
Hello, Matteo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me here, and I'm really excited. And I will say to everybody who's listening, sorry for my Italian accent, but that's what you get. Sorry.
That's where he's from.
He's from Italy. It brings colour and flavour and an international vibe, so we sound more important.
We're going multilingual.
Well, it's just an accent. Expanding, he's not going to speak in Italian. Expanding the market, exactly.
Pleasure to have you along, Matteo.
Absolutely. Matt, I met as I've moved to a new town, and we've been gaming a lot recently, which has been great, and now we've got him on the show. And we're going to be doing some more projects in the future. So listen out for those. Matt, give us a little bit of background on how you got into board gaming and what are the sorts of things you're into these days.
Oh, well, that's a long story.
We've got about an hour. So.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, it's just going to be 55 minutes. Oh, okay. Well, as everyone, getting into board games when I was a kid, probably like my favorite game of all time still at today is HeroQuest. That was my first start in board game. That's why at today I'm a big fan of any dungeon crawler or any D&D type of games. Just that's my flavor. To these days there's a lot of Warhammer and a lot of any kind of board games. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of friends and a girlfriend that really likes board games, so we play a lot. We have a lot of board games at home, too many, and we moved house too. We moved from London now down to the coast for a bigger house, and now already that bigger house is not big enough for all the board games.
It's amazing how quickly your stuff just expands to fill the new space.
Right? Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, that's me, and any kind of board games, but yes, my true love is with any dungeon crawler.
Big dungeon crawlers. You took a couple of big deliveries recently as well, right?
The other. Oh, yeah. There's been Oddsworn that just arrived, the second print, that it was massive. Just yesterday, OrcQuest just arrived from Monolith. Can't wait to play it. But again, another massive box, and there are too many coming in the next few months, and I'm not sure how I'm going to hide it from my girlfriend.
It's people like you that make my own purchasing feel so much moderate. So I'm glad to know.
We're glad that exists because it makes our addiction feel less serious.
Yeah, you need a yardstick to measure against.
Right? Absolutely. Good stuff. Well, we're the nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. Simon, are you ready?
I am ready, mate.
Tom, are you ready?
I am now ready.
Matt, are you ready?
Let's do it.
I'm ready. And if you guys are ready, it's time to get hyped as we preview all things Essen Spiel. We're going to Germany, baby.
Woo!
Some of us, like Tom's like 50-50 maybe, but three of us.
Maybe going to Germany,
maybe.
Maybe
going to Germany. So we're going to talk all things Essen Spiel as we dive in to this week's episode. This week, we're doing as we did last year and previewing the mecca of tabletop gaming events, known commonly as Essen Spiel. And in this show, we're going to be discussing the event as a whole, what it is, why the hell it's so important, and most importantly, we're going to discuss our top five games that we are most excited about for the show.
Top five? I thought it was top 50. Oh, man.
That's the thing about Essen Spiel, right? I mean, like 1,000 games get released every year.
1,000 plus, right? It's absurd. It's so many games premiere at Spiel every year. It's where all the Kickstarters aim to land. It's where all the new releases sort of get announced. That or Gen Con, right? So It's certainly Europe's biggest release schedule.
Released event.
It's almost a double-edged sword, though, in a way, I think, depending on your scale as a publisher or developer, because it's a chance to get your game in front of the most people possible, but also with the most competition surrounding you at all times. It's like the November computer game release, where everyone wants the Christmas hit. Yeah. So they all release in the second week of November, and then everyone gets battered. So just
summer blockbusters.
Spread it out. That being said, I'm looking forward to seeing a bunch of stuff. Well, so
As someone who is going to look at and buy, hopefully, games, it's perfect for the visitor. Maybe not so much desirable for the publishers.
Yeah, that's true.
It's great to be able to get so much access to so many different publishers and games all at once.
I mean, it's going to be great. There are, the list is almost infinite. I spent probably a week just going through every game that was going to be presented. And you got everything from the massive one, like, I don't know, from Simon to the very unknown publisher. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely fantastic. And for me, it's going to be the first time I spiel. Mm. So that I can't wait, because I think that's going to be absolutely amazing. I know that I'm going to lose my head because it's...
your wallet.
I hope I'm going to lose my wallet so I don't have to buy
it. Have you been to any other shows before?
Not really. Not as a purely board game show. Okay. So this is going to be my kind
of... It's going to blow your mind.
Yes.
Yeah. It is, go big. Yeah, it's mammoth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is a tremendously large event. We talked about it. Was it five halls?
It was... At least six halls.
Yeah,
God
damn
halls.
It.
Yeah, hall 1, 2, 3 was the biggest, as we mentioned last year, absolutely enormous scale. And then 1 and 2 were the other two big hitters. And then 4, 5, 6 were the more like the indie publishers, and
I remember there was like
more like RPG content, additional like peripheral stuff like Dyson artwork and so on. All great stuff, though.
There was that one area which was just indie games, right? So there was that.
It was
just
like
loads
Indie
of really...
Alley or something like that.
That's right.
It was all tiny little individual independent
publishers. That's where we met the Dark Omen guys last year.
That's right, yeah. Dark Omen. I wonder if they're going to be there this
time.
They are. Well, yep. We're going to have to say hello to them. Good stuff. Excellent. Yeah, and there is everything there. And as we talked about last year, it was originally created in the year of our way, 1983. So it's the 40th year of Spiel.
Dude, we're getting old.
I know. It's the year of our way in 1983.
Wayne and I have both had our birthdays in the last month.
Yeah. Sorry, the year of our Simon as well.
Yeah.
1983. And apparently this is going to be the biggest one ever. Like, the biggest one. And it was already pretty fucking big.
I wonder
big
if that
we
means
went.
They'll be using the one hall that was sort of not populated last
year. The entrance
hall,
yeah.
The queuing hall.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, it was already enormous. And it was. We still had... when we went last year, the masks and things, the
we
post-COVID
did, yeah,
stuff.
They were still, they weren't super strict about it, but they were still sort of pushing for people to wear masks, so it'll be nice to be able to breathe on people freely.
I think we'll probably still see quite a lot of masking.
But there may well
which
be,
which is fine. I'm kind of tempted myself, but I think not having that...
At least it's not obligatory this
kind
time.
Kind of, yeah, a bit of an interruption to your day in a sense.
But. It is, and it's just, you know, it's not comfortable. In addition to being on your feet walking around all day looking at stuff, it's sort of sensory overload, and then you have to wear a mask all day, every day for 3-4 days. It's just a bit too much.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I'm happy that we went back to a more normal way, so...
Nice and easy it'll be, hopefully, this year. So, as of today... 2 weeks from Spiel, under 2 weeks from Spiel.
Ten days away.
There are 1,069 titles currently being launched for availability.
Madness.
Being made available at Essen, which is absolute madness. Not all of those are new. Some of those are reprints. Some of those are expansions. Obviously, not all of those are going to be in English. There are a large percentage, obviously, in different languages, mostly German.
Huge quantity of games released in German, yeah.
Yeah, loads in German. But even just the English ones and just new games, standalone, not expansion content. It's over 500. I think 650 in English, which is, it's a lot. I mean, you're never going to get through anywhere near that. And so we've had to boil it down. And before we even get into the top fives, which you're going to get close to, let's talk about how you created your list. Was there anything specific that you were sort of looking for? And I'll give you an idea. My initial shortlist was nearly 30 games long. It was real hard to get down to 5 games.
I haven't quite made it to 5. I kept some in reserve because I'll inevitably cross over.
Right.
So it's more like 10-ish.
More like 10-ish.
Yeah, but yeah, it was. I think I did similar to what I did last year, was there's always a BGG thread that is all of the releases listed, and then it has sort of like an upvote, downvote sort of thumbs up mechanic.
Rated by hotness.
Rated by hotness. So you can filter that by hotness, and then I start at the top and tend to sort of like scroll through until I find a significant number that interests me and stop before I lose my mind.
Yep.
Yeah, it was like forever scrolling down on every game. I think I narrowed down to eliminating everything that was like an expansion or... Because there was a lot of expansion.
I tried to skip them, yeah.
I kind of like glissed on the ones that are reskin. Like, for example, one game that is coming out is My Island. That is a reskin of My City. Of course, there's going to be like different mechanics, but it's mostly the same game. Just
A continuation of a series.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of like skipped them. So I went purely on the stuff that is a new.
Yeah, fair enough.
A few of them are not new because they've already been presented to Gen Con, but I kind of like... Leave the American on the side.
It's his own thing, isn't it?
Couple of them that are not even going to be released. They're just going to be demo there. Really excited to see it. And because I want to know if my money is going to be worth it.
I think that's a great use of the time, HBO, right? There's so much being demoed there.
Yes. And I don't know how, but it did happen that I got a lot of Italian stuff on my list. And it wasn't it just like happened.
So just horrible guild.
just horrible guild stuff. Okay. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've largely followed the similar kind of processes. I have got a couple of expansions, or at least one in my list, as you guys will probably guess. One of the ways I looked, as well as kind of going down that hotness list, I figured there might be stuff that I really like, but the general populace isn't so interested
That's
in.
That's true.
So scrolling through 700 to find where it ranks might not necessarily find it. So I've looked at, you know, the companies that we already buy games from and then seeing what they're listing as previews.
Yeah.
You know, looking at AEG, looking at CMR, looking at Panda.
Be honest, Simon.
I'm not going to deny that there's a Pandasaurus game. You know, I'm not sure if Garfield games are going to be there. There's a whole... So, you know, Fantasy Flight, looking at their individual pages on Instagram or Facebook or wherever else and seeing what they're going to be bringing, going, oh yeah, that's definitely one I'm interested in, or maybe disregarding it. Mm. It's not necessarily a peak title for me, but we're definitely going to look at their stand regardless.
Yeah, I think having access to things like Instagram and social media, right, you get a bit of a pulse for a lot of those releases before the show, because there's various sort of release copies floating around, there's various influencers already advertising review copies of various games, or, you know, they've filtered over from Gen Con, like Matt was just saying, and they've already been demoed once somewhere or released somewhere once, but we just haven't had access to them yet.
Yeah, or Gen Con or UKG will be a demo and then they'll be made available to buy at Essen or something. So, yeah, similar to you folks, I did a sort by hotness, but then also it's not a perfect system because games get added every single day. So a few days later, I would sort by recently added, see if anything interesting popped up in the real recent list. That there hasn't been enough time.
Yep.
Because, you know, as we know, sometimes it's last minute and publishers will bring games in, or sometimes games that are real high up on the hotness list just won't be there.
We found last year, didn't we, when we spoke to...
Deliveries didn't happen.
Or they've been made like two days prior and... air freighted across.
That's right.
This game is as new as you could get. It's, you know, the paint's still drying.
Literally comes straight from the factory.
Like, they had a problem with heat that almost wasn't available. I think that's, they had to wait for a second shipping or whatever.
It was sort of staggered deliveries over the course of the show.
The Wolves didn't get there in time. There was like three copies or something.
trying to get it out of customs.
Yeah, like 100 maybe.
Yeah, there was a few. The Wild Style, I think, that was there to demo but not available. Anyway, so a few things there. But we tried my best. So it's not going to be a perfect system, but we tried our best. So.
If nothing else, we've all got a list of stuff we're super pumped to go and see.
Absolutely. And with that, let's dive into the top five, shall we? Matt, let's start with you. As the new one to the show.
Honored guest.
All right. My number five is going to be Plantanubo.
Plantanubo.
So Plantanubo is a Eurogame, and the setup is super cool. I think at least the artwork and everything. Basically, it's a steampunk world.
Nice.
Where they started...
The solar punk one.
Yes, I saw this. Exactly that one. You basically build... There are these like giant ships in the air where they grow plants. So you're basically growing plants in this kind of like... steampunk environment,
solar punk, and you build like the economy is around oxygen.
Exactly.
You're building, nice. You're building like a city in the trees, exactly. and building like renewable resources.
Never heard of this
airships
game.
No, it looks are great. Like, they look like little bees.
That it's really cool. I think the artwork looks fantastic.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the box art now. It looks so good.
The setup looks great. I mean, I love a setup. That's a lot of time. It's not... that always drives me in. A lot of the time, it's the setup of the game. That's why I wasn't really keen on a smartphone, but then actually found out it was actually a good game.
Yeah. it's very, very bland to look at.
Yeah. but yeah, so basically the players just need to create more oxygen as possible. So your oxygen is your points. Yeah, it sounds like something that I haven't seen around. Nice. It's still, again, it's a Euro game, so that the mechanics is going to be of a standard Euro games, probably with some some creative twist to it. But I think that it could be a very good game.
So looks
I
got, real nice.
I'm just thinking that the designer is Michael Keller, who did Le Granja.
Yeah,
great designer. I'm seeing Uwe Rosenberg on there.
So and Rosenberg?
Some,
yeah.
Like two
big hitters.
Super well-known names in that design.
So exactly. So the game itself should be good
should be
based
solid,
on
mate,
just the designer. Yeah. It looks good. It should not be one of those £300 games because it's the components. I think it looks like
reasonable,
pretty reasonable. So yes, I hope to come back home with a copy.
That's
so
like that's that. Nice, a bit of action drafting, economic stuff, environmental stuff. Love that. Good stuff. Tom, you're number five.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with Evacuation.
That's which a pretty good one.
It's
that's
right good. Near the top of the list.
Yes.
In the hotness ratings on BGG. But it sort of really appealed to me. I already really like a Euro game. I really like an economy game. And it's the twist is that you're managing two economies at once. So the theme of the game is that Earth or the planet that you're on is basically falling apart through climate driven crises. Sounds familiar. And
what is
you,
the strange
you world? Start with a functioning economy on that planet. And then the goal of the game is to transfer to a whole separate planet. So you have to pack up your existing economy and basically dismantle it over the course of the game and build a new economy on a second planet.
That's interesting.
And the catch is that the resources have to be transported, so you can't use them in both locations. You have to physically transport them from one planet to the other, and then you can use them on the other planet.
That sounds really
super
cool.
Interesting. And I've just seen it. It's a... It's a four complexity, Tom, so you've picked a real heavy Euro. What a surprise.
Oh, yeah. Two economies at once.
He's actually higher on my list. Same
game.
There
we go.
Is it? Okay.
I saw a few previews of stuff. Everybody agrees that is a very heavy game.
Yes.
But it looks fantastic. I think these things where you need to balance the two things at the same time, when you basically trying to decrease on one planet and increase on the others.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've never really come across a game where you start with an economy and you have to dismantle it over time.
That's really
in order to build. Yeah, I mean, you're building another economy somewhere else, but starting with a fully functional engine that you have to take to pieces is really interesting.
That's real interesting. Yeah, and Vladimir Suchi as well, who's another famous designer.
Messina, he did stuff for CG, 3047, and
Pulsar.
Yeah,
last year's Woodcraft.
Yeah, did a bunch of, so yeah, that looks like a good and nice way to Euro, as is right for Tom. Good. Simon, you're number five.
You guys said you hadn't necessarily included expansions. I'm 100% including this one.
That's
possibly
fine.
Possibly my top pick. These aren't necessarily like, oh, this is my fifth most excited one. I'm just going through my list. Cascadia Landmarks. I'm well excited for this. Cascadia, as you guys know, is one of my favourite games. It won Spiel des Jahres last year. Or year before. I forget now.
Might be last year.
They were playing it last night. So yeah.
Cascadia is great.
So Cascadia Landmarks is adding in new gameplay mechanics in that you are building these landmarks on your tile spaces. There's new scoring mechanics associated with that, and then more scoring cards in general. Also allows up to a 6-player game now.
Wow, adding more players.
This is one of the few games where I would actually
consider
a 6-player game because Yeah, you're making your decisions within a matter of seconds each round rather than a 4 or 5 minute.
It's a very easy decision point.
I'm really looking forward to this one.
I think that's going to add something extra for people that like bigger games, right? Like more complex games. Cascadia is wonderful. I think it's a great design, but I think some people might want a bit extra.
It's more on the lighter side. Yeah, but again, it's one of those that you put it on the table in 30 seconds, start playing in another 30 seconds, and 20 minutes out of it. We were playing two players, and probably 20, 25 minutes, the game is done.
Yep.
And you can go another one. Yeah, yeah, you can start another game.
I can introduce new players to it and play an entire game during a lunchtime at work. So that's perfect for me.
I think that's a wonderful pick, mate.
I mean, it's not on my list, but it's going to be on my buying list. Yeah. So it's not on my top five, but it's on my buying list.
Guaranteed purchase for me. And Ant from the MTVB podcast has also asked me to get a copy for him.
Friends, send us your shopping lists and we'll see what we can pick you up. My number five is Galactic Cruise. This is my heavy Euro pick of my list. It looks super fascinating. This is a debut release by a debut publisher, which is Kinson Key Games. It's a heavy worker placement type game with hand management and open drafting, which, as we worked out when I did a little analysis on my game collection, I freaking love open drafting.
I
freaking love hand management.
The boards already immediately remind me of Beyond the Sun.
Beyond the Sun. And I love one of my favorite games ever, Beyond the Sun. So really interesting. So on your turn, you're either going to place a worker to take two actions in this ever-expanding network, or you're going to recall all of your Earthbound workers to collect funding bonuses. So different actions you can do include getting blueprints, making shuttles, attracting guests, building developments. It's essentially a game about sending really rich people into space. Kind of like the Elon Musk-esque. What's the other guy? The Amazon's...
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. They're all doing they're all sending rich people into space. Yeah. So it's that. You are essentially one of those companies making shuttles, creating an economy, and trying to get the most points that way with all of the actions based around that. I love me some worker placement. I love me some hand management, and I love open drafting. So, that was my number five. That is Galactic Cruise. On to number four, Matt.
All right, my number four, and I'm not sure exactly on the pronunciation of this, but it's going to be either Evenfall or Evenfall. Whatever it is, one of the two.
Yes.
The thing is...
Evenfall.
The designer is Stefano Di Silvio, so he's an Italian guy. I haven't actually found if he did anything else. However, these games look, the art again looks amazing. It's a card-driven engine building, and the setup is basically this. Evenfall is kind of like the end of an era, and you got the Tree of Lives to start opening portals to different dimensions, gateways and stuff like that. And you got witches and mages and doing all sorts of things, and you basically build your engine to control and to start this new era of magic. Basically, there's not many other information about the game itself. It looks great.
The meatballs look awesome.
I'm seeing potion bottles and a card that says Cat Advisor, so I'm sold.
It looks absolutely great. So I would love to demo this game while we're there, and very much buying it and support the Italian
support your country, mate.
Yeah, why not?
Good stuff. Love that. Very nice. Tom, you're number four.
I'm gonna go with Arborea.
I've heard a lot about this.
That's looking nice.
So I sort of drooled slightly over Botoku last year.
Yes.
When we went, I think it was, we first saw it at UKGE.
We did last year. I keep looking at it now and it
sort
comes
of,
up.
Yeah, it's filled with sort of semi-transparent, brightly coloured pieces. And it had this sort of like wonderful bright colour palette. And then I saw Arborea on the list this year, and it just like resonated with that sort of same feeling that I saw when we were looking at Botoku. It looks similar. It actually has a similar sort of theme. So it's sort of full of little screen printed, cute little forest spirit meeples.
Wow, yeah, I've just brought it up here. It's super colourful.
Yeah,
it's super colourful.
It's worker placement and some engine building. And the worker placement is on sort of advancing tracks. So the tracks all advance over time and all the actions sort of become more powerful over the time. It looks really interesting. Very much reminded me of Bitoku. The art style super, super appeals to me. I'd be very keen to give it a try. I'm not sure if I would immediately pick it up. It looks quite complex. I think it's much more of a worker placement than it is an engine builder. But I'm definitely sort of keen to try it.
Simon, you're number four.
I am hoping that Fantasia games have Unconscious Mind for at least a play. I don't imagine it'll be out for sale because I think the Kickstarter hasn't fulfilled yet.
Unconscious Mind is a wonderful pick. Yeah, it's an exciting one.
It looks really good. I was tempted when it was in Kickstarter to back it. I think our friend Ben has.
Yes.
So we'll definitely play it with him when we can. It's just such a fascinating concept to kind of play, or not necessarily play as, but effectively in the realm of Sigmund Freud and friends. Their Wednesday Psychological Society.
That's
where you're
right, yeah.
Kind of delving into people's dreamscapes and somehow scoring points off what their brain is working through. It's got rondel mechanisms, worker placements, set collections, like
open drafting.
Isn't it like multiple rondels?
Yeah.
I was reading it. Multiple rondels. This sounds mad. It looks great.
It looks fantastic. Quite a luxurious kind of package from what I've seen. And yeah, it just looks super exciting and a really intriguing concept. So I'm hoping, as I say, that they've got that at least for a demo play, if not a full
looks great.
Detail.
It looks absolutely it's great. Fantastic. Yes,
it looks amazing. I mean, I'll spoil it now because that was my number one pick. Unconscious Mind, because it looks absolutely fascinating. Yeah, plays in about a couple hours at the most.
It's a really unique theme. I can't think of any games that are in the same sort of. Even on the same sort of wavelength.
It's fascinating. And it's the sophomore release by Fantasia Games, as you mentioned, who did one of my number one picks of last year, which was Endless Winter, which I freaking love. Mm. And we're hopefully going to play after this podcast. It's a phenomenal game. And I'm just dead keen to see what they've got coming next. It looks great. It does all those things that I like. Bit of worker placement, again, bit of contract work, bit of set collection, bit of open drafting, multiple rondels. I haven't played many rondel games. I've got Iki, which is kind of a rondel game.
Yeah.
So that'll be...
Yeah, it's not a mechanic I'm overly familiar with, but just seeing it in action, it just does look so appealing.
Yeah, and as you say, the theme is fascinating. That's a good one, mate. I like that. My number four is Through Ice and Snow. This is by Two Tomatoes Games. It is 1 to 4 players. It is... midweight Euro, so it's right in my wheelhouse. Plays in about 45 to 90 minutes, which is all of those things I very much like. It has worker placement, a bit of point movement, and a sort of dynamic map which grows over the game. And the reason I'm so excited about this game is this is a Kickstarter that I missed, and it's based on a theme that I am sort of semi-obsessed with.
Oh, now an angering spell. Yeah, I remember talking about this.
I think I flicked past the artwork of this and thought, that looks very grey.
I'm sure when it was on Kickstarter, Wayne and I talked about it. Yeah
not but, one I'm familiar with.
But it's essentially, it's that era of discovery where the British Empire was trying to work their way to the North and South Poles, right? And all of that. And you had like Scott versus Amundsen. And that whole story, from a history perspective, I am fascinated with. I've read a lot about it and I think it's an amazing real story with heroism and exploration and adventure. And obviously there was tragedy associated with it as well, and it was very difficult. And this game will tend to reflect that. So you've got this tile-based map where you're obviously exploring your way to the Northwest Passage. Anyway,
looks like some kind of segmented map pieces.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you're voyaging to try and get as far as you can against your opponent crew. So also trying to do the same thing, which reflects pretty well what the actual history was like. It was competing countries or competing people trying to be the first. So for me, it was the theme that really dragged me in. But it also is a worker placement game, which I very much like. And I like the idea of that, and also a little bit of exploration with the dynamic map. That was my number four.
It seems to fit into your kind of scope of things, like a bit of almost kind of survival, like you're up against it.
Yes.
Versus the game, as well as trying to outdo your opponents.
Yeah, exactly, because it's going to be difficult to get there. So.
And it actually looks pretty good.
Yeah,
I totally missed this one. I would bought it just for the meeples, to be honest.
So many different screen-printed meeples. I like the dogs, the little huskies.
Like
which, interesting point of order, is why Amundsen did so well. They had dogs, whereas the British took donkeys to the South Pole. Terrible idea. They all died.
Those well-known hardy donkeys.
Those well-known hardy
donkeys. Can't get wet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, whereas obviously Amundsen was like, yeah, no, we're taking sled dogs, mate. You're an idiot. Anyway, good. That was my number four. Matt, you're number three.
Number three. This was presented at Gen Con, so it's going to be first time in EU, and he's Sky Team.
Yes.
Sky Team, co-op game, two players games where you basically need to land a plane. You and your second player, you pilot and co-pilot, you need to basically, it's one of those like mind game where you need to try to understand what the other player is gonna do, because your action is gonna, you will need to balance yours and the other player action to actually level the plane, go to the right speed, go to the right altitude. So it's one of those that looks pretty good. And I think it's one of those, two-player games that you just put it on the table and enjoying it. Supposed to be like a short game. And the cool things is like each airport is like a different setup. So you will need
Different challenge,
different
the
way
puzzle.
Of landing the plane. Yeah. That sounds super cool. All the reviews that I read so far, everybody's like blown away by this game. Mm. And I mean, I love the two-player games, and this sounds like my alley.
I have a tendency to sort of avoid two-player games, not intentionally, just because I tend not to play two players.
Yeah, okay.
The vast majority of the time, I don't play two-player games.
I do understand, because me and my girlfriend play a lot, between us at home, just like on a Tuesday evening, like what we're going to do, or let's play this or that.
Fair enough.
So that's why otherwise I will understand why it's not a pick for everyone, because it's like if you just play it in a group of friends, if you normally
it's more of a hosted event, if you only have a two-player game, then
I totally agree, but like we do a lot of Azul or these kind of games that are just like one versus one or co-op in two, and that's probably why is on number three for me.
I think this is going to be a smash hit, I'll be honest with you. I think it's going to fly off the shelves. It looks great.
It looks like such a fantastic little package.
Yeah,
and
really
I quite
does.
Like a small footprint game once in a while, because so many of these games, like my last pick, Unconscious Mind, I think that's a table sprawl.
That's really
cool. This is a nice little neat package. It looks great.
I've seen a couple of playthroughs of it. I think this one looks absolutely brilliant. This is a great pick. And I will probably end up picking an upper copy as well, I think. It looks good. Tom, you're number three.
The Fox Experiment.
I wondered if this would be on there.
Which I was sort of expecting to be at least on Simon's list, if not also Wayne's, because we played this last year.
We did, as a demo.
We did a high-speed, very frantic version of the Fox Experiment with a German guy who was very efficient.
He was very efficient.
So on here it says playtime 60 minutes, which, that's playtime is always a little bit misleading anyway, because it's that playtime 60 minutes for me is if everyone knows exactly what they're doing and they've played a few times,
right? Subject to
quite experience. Often at least 50% more, if not double the time.
Yes.
And I think we got through the whole game in about 40 minutes.
We hammered it.
I still can't believe you guys played an entire game of it.
Oh, we blasted through it.
Because I got three turns of the wolves, and you're like, no,
I loved every second of that game. It was really cool.
It's really great. It does some really cool stuff.
So it's by the same designer as Wingspan.
Yep, Elizabeth Hargreaves.
Hargreaves? Yes. Is in the similar sort of conservation of animals theme. It's about selective breeding programs for foxes. And the idea is that you are collecting pairs of foxes. They have their own little sort of like cards.
And
you
want,
they will have there's four different traits, I believe. So it's sort of like four different traits. And you want to sort of like pick the traits that sort of like synergize together. The more of a color of a trait that you have on each of the mother and father of the cards, the more stats that the resulting pup ends up with, pup or pups end up with. And when you have when you've put together a mother and a father and you create a pup, you get to name it yourself.
Yeah.
And it has all of the customized stats combined from the mother and the father, because that's sort of how things work.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, those stats become dice that you roll. So you have a set of lovely custom colored dice for each trait. And they generate resources that you can then use to buy upgrades and sort of expand on your conservation program over a number of rounds. But it's really cool because you sort of build this like a family tree of foxes over the course of the game. And the pups from the pups from one generation become the parents in the next generation. So the game naturally sort of ramps up with stats. Yeah, with stats that sort of accumulate and get higher and higher over the course of the game.
It's awesome, it's
really cool.
It's a great like a dice pool builder, right? You're just building pools of dice as you breed better pups.
And yeah, like dice pool builders where you get to throw like a massive handful of dice afterwards is always satisfying.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because it has some roll and write elements, but it's not a roll and write, being clear. It's a board game.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see a board game that has some writable bits.
A little
bits.
Bit.
Yeah. A little bit of inject that. Just semi-permanence for that.
Yeah.
Game.
Just name the pups. Name the pups.
Write some stats down.
Yeah. It was Elizabeth Hargrave rather than
Hargreaves. Hargrave, that's right.
Just to clarify.
Wasn't your stud pup named Dwayne?
I think I did name the progenitor Wayne, yes.
He was a beast, mate.
Yeah.
Anyway, you
put that like a terrible one. Is that going to be a purchase if it's available then, Tom?
I definitely really, really enjoyed it last year and I was sort of waiting for
I'm not entirely sure if it's going to be at retail or not.
I'm not sure, actually. I'm hoping that it will be.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, let's stick... not to disappoint you guys. Let's stick with Pandasaurus then. I want to see more of Emerge.
Emerge looks wonderful.
They've got another couple of smaller titles out to Pandasaurus. But yeah, Emerge, we saw a sneak preview of at UKGE. It is now just hit retail this week, I believe. It looks so nice. Quite a long, narrow board, as it were, a seascape where new islands have emerged and you are playing researchers finding out what lives there and how it all interacts. Mm. It sounds like a relatively, no more than the midweight kind of level game, as tends to be for Pandasaurus.
Yeah.
Great, gorgeous colour palette, artwork. I believe it's the same artist who did the artwork for Sonora. So it's that nice kind of pastel hues. Yeah. And you've got dice rolling in there, and also I think there's some like market drafting of animals. And I remember Rainer telling us that there was almost like a ranked biodiversity, so you can't have like birds before you've got insects. You can't have carnivores before you've got birds. You can't have... I'm going to put the big-hitting animal, the most point-scoring animal on first. Like, no, you need to have crabs first, and then you can have... And they've all got these individual cool little mini wooden meeples, all shaped like the animals. And then the island pieces... are kind of skewed cardboard pieces which stack up throughout the game. So you're actually creating these island shapes on top of your board. And it just really...
That's a very cool idea.
It looks like cool. And
sort of
gameplay
board
really
game-based topography.
Yeah. And the production looks wonderful. I mean, Pandasaurus are some of my favourite productions. Yeah, and this one looks real nice. Real, real nice. Wooden pieces, I think, as well.
Wooden meeple pieces and cardboard. Yeah,
that's a great pick, mate.
Yeah, and it's from, as far as I can tell, a new designer, a guy called Adam DeYoung. I couldn't find anything else listed for him on.
They're quite brave with that. They did the same with Skate Summer, didn't they?
Yeah, and the recent Beacon Patrol, which we all really enjoyed. Yeah, a new designer.
They'll give them a chance if there's a good game out there. I'm dead. That was gonna go on my list, but I thought I won't because I just know someone's gonna put it on his list. Right, my number three is Sea Dragons. This is a game by a publisher called Fractal Yugos. It is 2 to 5 players. I like that it plays 5. Rare that you get a game that plays 5.
Always have problems with 5.
Yeah, me too.
Pandasaurus games all play 5. Mm.
So midweight-ish, about a 2.0 on the BGG scale, plays in about 45 minutes. So again, all of those things in my wheelhouse. It's an area majority kind of pattern building game, bit of set collection, as it's really funky production where you have these little wooden dragons.
This reminds me of something else.
It reminds me of Tsuro.
Yeah, a little bit like Tsuro.
Yes,
a little bit like that.
That's the first time I saw it. I was like, oh, is it Tsuro? No, actually.
It looks really cool. So in Sea Dragons, you are essentially dragons protecting the seas from pirates, and you're sinking pirate ships and then stealing their treasure. becoming the legendary protectors of the aquatic kingdoms.
I've only just got to load up the picture. That looks freaking amazing. Yeah.
Doesn't it? It looks freaking great,
and
right?
I went by Webson Santiago, yeah. who I met last year.
And Webson Santiago is a phenomenal artist. So I think it will look even better in person. So I'm very keen to see the final version.
God, yeah.
Yeah, actually.
That looks fantastic.
Yeah, the colours look great. The pieces look wonderful. The little dragon pieces are amazing. You're creating this sort of... like a giant sea serpent, yeah, which with constituent parts.
It's very,
of the head and then
it's
the body
very
of it.
Sort of Loch Ness monster, mm. classical sort yeah. of sea dragon artwork.
That's yeah, right. It's cool. really good. So you essentially playing as a family of sea dragons, and each turn, so you've got two pattern cards in your hand, and you're going to play one of them to position your sea dragon on the board to increase your presence in one of the seas, and you're going to be able to sink ships and collect treasures. But there's a little interesting restriction in that you can't place your own sea dragon next to each other. And if you place your sea dragon next to someone else's, they're going to get treasure from you. So there's some interesting sort of strategic play there about how you place your dragons out. And yeah, it just looks fabulous. The production looks amazing. Looks interesting. I don't have a game like that. So I'm dead keen to try that on out.
Looks
so,
fun.
Yeah, it looks fun.
My question will be, what do dragons do with the treasures?
Like, what do dragons ever do with treasures? Have they hoard it. They hoard it.
Yeah. They roll around in it.
They roll around. Yeah.
Those poor pirates. Like, just like.
Dragons just, are powered by the scale of their hoard.
That's right. Powered by the scale of their hoard. That was my number three. That was sea dragons.
That's great, man.
Matt. Number two.
My number two is actually Evacuation again. So, yes.
Have you got a honourable mention you might want to slot into this particular section?
I do have one, and it's Rats of Wister.
I've heard about this.
So, it's a strategy work placement game where you basically are a family of rats that escaped Wister. Wister is the famous, like, places where they were doing experimentation on rats and all that stuff. So you're basically kind of like a super intelligent mouse or rat, something okay. like that. And basically you start like founding your own like kingdom, and you need to fight against all the family. So each player is gonna have one of the family of mouses, and you kind of now need to go into the house to get food for your own tribe. It looks the artwork looks really good. It's made by Danilo Sabbia and Simone Luciani, another two Italian guys.
Are you sure you didn't?
filter by Italian designer.
Oh yeah, I totally picked only Italian designers, guys. Yeah. The totally artwork, accidental. Yeah.
The artwork for me on a first look is reminding me of Studio Ghibli's Arrietty.
Yes,
which is their take on The Borrowers. That box art just looks like that for me, which is absolutely a great
thing. I've heard
good
things about this. This seems like a good one.
Yeah, it's supposed to be good. And then I got another honourable mention, but that is more like a hope, a dream.
Okay.
Last year, Square Enix announced, just put a piece of paper inside their stand saying that they were developing a Final Fantasy VII board game.
Oh, yeah, right.
That was a year ago. And then everything went silent. They got a stand this year.
Ooh. No way.
Okay.
I went there and I checked. There is a Square Enix stand. So,
take my money.
Who knows what it's going to be? It was supposed to be like a miniature game, so think like I don't know if it's a boss battle. They didn't say anything. They just say there was a miniature game for Final Fantasy VII. So I hope that with the fact that the second part of the remake is coming out,
lots of hype
growing with that. A lot of IP games come out like normally just straight after a board game. Like thinking about Steamforge does with a lot of their IPs. If there is a new remake, make sure the Steamforge will have an IP game 6 months after.
I would just hope that it's not a cash in on the IP.
I know
you want it to have a good designer. You want it to be good.
But that's the dream.
Yeah.
I will buy it anyway.
I know myself.
But yeah, finger crossed, because that's going to be...
That'd be interesting.
Okay. That's really cool.
And if they do the announcement while we're there, I'm going to lose it.
Yeah, I lose my shit. Yeah. Love it. Okay. Tom, you're number two.
I'm going to go with Nucleum.
Nucleum. Oh, wait. Another heavy Euro.
another heavy Euro that is mostly an economy game.
Nice.
Okay. So Nucleum is an alternative... 19th century history where nuclear fission is basically discovered early.
19th century?
1800s. Wow. So the idea is that someone manages to harness the power of the atom and build a nucleum, which is basically a nuclear-powered battery. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes the core of all power generation worldwide. And this is going to be basically set in the era where you're trying to build networks for power sort of distribution, but it's very much sort of based around like a railway system. So you build like railways in order to be able to sort of set up factories to build these nucleums in order to be able to transport them places, generate power. It looks really cool, and it's sort of like an alternate history thing, and it reminded me very much of like Scythe as sort of like alternate history. Sort of steampunky alternative history. I suppose it's atomic punk. Is that the right one?
I think atomic punk is a thing.
Or like Fallout.
Yeah.
Where it's like an alternative history where nuclear power takes off early and then sort of slots in strangely with the other technology of the time.
Yeah. Right.
But it looks really interesting. The player boards look, I mean, just looking at them, look fairly complicated. But it's got a multi-purpose sort of domino action selection where you place them sort of like next to your board and you pick one action or the other. Mm-hmm. It's got, looks like it's got loads and loads of sort of decision points, loads of really nice sort of player boards, and looks really, really crunchy.
I've not seen this one at all until just now. Mm.
It was very high on the list. I think it was
it's up in the top 10. It's high, and there you go, you've got the economy boards, look really, really cool. It's got almost like sliding jigsaw pieces in the economy tracks.
That looks really, really interesting.
It's got loads of really nice, like deluxe looking components.
I can see what you mean about that comparison with Scythe slightly, with the tracks up the side and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
And strong looking design pair, guys who did Sulkin and Vengeance Roland Fight and a bunch of Tillitum on there as previous game designs. So
yeah, yeah,
nice.
It's going to be a solid title.
Well, there is an Italian designer, one of the two, Simone Luciani.
Yeah,
Just saying. That was not me.
Matteo approved.
Matteo approved. Nice. Simon.
I've just got a list, really, haven't I? What shall I pick? I'm going to go with Apiary, which I've only heard about in the last couple of weeks because it was only announced and launched in the last couple of weeks.
Apiary?
It is the new Stonemaier title.
Oh, okay.
I did hear about this.
Designed by Connie Vogelman. It's a brand new designer. He picked this up at a local games play day and went, oh yeah, I'm interested in developing that with you. You are playing a race of sentient
bees who are
going out into space. They've kind of like become that level of dominant species, I suppose. And yeah, traveling out in space, so you've got a bit of planetary exploration, finding new tiles that have certain resources and abilities on them, degree of worker placement, and then the workers get kind of leveled up. You develop what they can do depending on what has occurred to or with them. And being worker placement, you can kind of bump a previous worker off a space, so you don't deny someone an ability to place. But if the worker gets bumped, the bumped worker gets developed, so it's a four-sided meeple effectively, and it gets more improved.
Ah.
So if you get your worker bumped off a place, it might go from a level 3 to a level 4, and then you go, cool, I've got a level 4 worker, I can now go put it here and do something even more impressive.
It's like Dice Forge. If your little sort of like worker meeple gets bumped off their existing space and sent home, you get a reward. You get like a payout.
That's
for
fascinating.
It, which is a cool sort of not area denial aspect for worker placement, but like an alternative thing where you're discouraged from doing it because it benefits someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. The only other game I'm particularly familiar with that's done that is Century New World, where
one person
can put a meeple on a space to get whatever that space does. If anyone else wants to use it, they have to basically up the game. It's like, okay, I'm going to use it, but I'm going to put two on and you get your one back.
Mm. Right.
All right, okay, you put two on there. I'm going to put three on there because I really want that space, but you get your two back. So you're constantly giving people something back for taking what they last did. So only announced and launched within the last 2 to 3 weeks. And it just looked really cool. So I want a closer look at that. I've watched Jamie Stegmaier's video on his YouTube channel, and it does look really cool. So I want to see it in person, hopefully give it a playthrough as well. I know that Stonemaier will have representatives at Essen this year. Jamie himself won't be there, but there'll be a few of the team out there. So hopefully we'll get a game.
Good. That'll be good.
My number two is Scholars of the South Tigris, which is the new Shem Phillips and Garfield Games game. One of my favourite games of all time is Raiders of the North Sea. And this is that designer. But that's actually a relatively sort of light to midweight Euro. I want to see what he does with more weight, more complexity.
So this is going to be a heavier one?
And this is much heavier.
I think Raiders is kind of like the entry level for this whole genre and kingdom, and I don't know what even to call it.
He does a whole... Yeah, I don't know either. But Shem Phillips does amazing stuff with worker placement. Right? That's his thing. He does weird stuff with it and does unique things with how you do workers.
Place a worker, pick up a worker, have a shitload of workers.
Yeah, they get locked away.
Lock away your workers permanently.
Yeah, does really interesting stuff with it. But this one is 1-4 players, 60 to 90 minutes. Again, in my wheelhouse in terms of time length. But it's 3.97 is the estimate on BGG.
Oh, yeah, more like quite 4, heavy then.
Quite heavy.
All right, I suppose I'm interested.
Yeah. But this also uses dice workers, which I quite like the idea of.
Oh, yeah, dice workers is interesting.
Dice workers has area control, which I like. Set collection, which I like. But also building a bag. Building a little bit of a deck. Building a bit of a pool.
I like a builder bag.
Yeah, build a bag.
Build a bag, push your luck.
Yeah, exactly. All that sort of stuff is in there as well. Based at the height of the Abbasid Caliphate, circa 830 AD. Caliphate. It looks fascinating. It looks complex. I'm in love with Raiders of the North Sea. One of my favourite games of all time. I'm keen to see what that feels like, what the designer can do with more mechanisms. And and this is like the latest one in that whole series of games. That's my number two. Matt. Your number one.
Are we going for number one? Number one. The number one for me this year is going to be a game that is actually on demo. So it's not even for purchase. And it's going to be the new game from Creative Game Studios. So same people as Chronicle of Druenogo.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Dante, The Invasion of Hell.
I keep seeing the models popping up on their Instagram page, and they are absurd.
I think it's going to be the next big thing. Though it's going to be, I think it's coming out on GameFound Q4, so end of this year. And it's going to be probably the bigger dungeon crawler.
The models remind me of things like the massive monsters in Kingdom Death Monster.
So it's, they say, well, I haven't really seen, there's nothing out about gameplay, so I really would like to play the demo. Unfortunately, all the tickets for the demo sold out in seconds. They came out during the night between a Thursday and a Friday night. I woke up at 5 in the morning, they were already gone. If Creative Game Studios are listening to this, please. it's supposed to mix up narrative gaming, and they call it war gaming. So apparently it's still a boss battler with a narrative side to it, but the boss battler, if they call it a war game, I'm more thinking about something more like Warhammer style rather than I move five spaces. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. They call it, there's going to be cinematic fights and all the story. Well, the story is based about the Dante
Alighieri's. Yeah.
So apparently goes very much with the book. So hopefully that's going to be good. And the player is going to have to do a lot of moral choices. Mm-hmm. And that will develop the story. So
I guess you can be sounds bad, you can be that's good, or you
sounds
can...
Sounds intriguing.
Sounds huge.
And you basically go
you've
down
seen, you've seen the size of all the boxes for Chronicles.
It might be a placeholder, but it says 180-minute playtime.
That's a big game.
It's Oppenheimer, the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, the minis just look insane. So yes, that's my number one, because I'm really excited for this game. It's been announced like now almost a year ago, but not much came out. And this, I think, is the first time that they're actually demoing the game. So that's why everything went sold out in seconds. So, But you never know. I'm going to be there and, I don't know, just pretend to be someone else. Or just
strangle someone and steal their place.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Just look official.
Yeah, look official. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good stuff. Tom, what's your number one?
I'm going to go with Kutna Hora.
Kutna Hora.
Yeah.
Nice. Is that another heavy...
It's another heavy Euro economy game.
I love you so much.
Yeah.
So 5-1 is heavier to like.
I mean, I think, yeah, out of my five games, three of them are heavy Euro economy games. Obviously, we spent a lot of time looking at Kutna Hora at UKGE.
Mm.
I had a demo play of it.
The pieces are fantastic. Mm. I love the sliding economy scales. It's all like tile placement, and then you're building buildings, and all the buildings look great. It just sounded really interesting when they gave us the overview. Simon got to have a play of it. So, Simon, I'm sure you could probably tell me more than I know.
I don't know. You probably read but more you, than I can you remember.
Had, but you had only good things to say about it.
Yeah, you're co-developing this city, the city of Silver. And you are paying varying prices. As you say, there's this kind of shifting economy based on what other people have done and what you yourself have done. Yeah. So you kind of pay for a plot. You've got these dual-use cards, so you can turn them around and can either be like, I'll buy plans or I'll build a building with this same card. But once you spent it, you can't then do the other option on it until you refresh. You can delve into the mines themselves and see what you get from the silver veins. And then, trying to manage this whole economic shift where you specialize as one of a number of...
Yeah, it's an economy game where you very much share the economy. What you do affects everyone else in terms of the prices, which may force people to make their changes.
Beer is now cheaper.
Yes.
But only for a certain period until someone else does something else. Mm-hmm, okay, beer's more expensive again, but bread's cheaper. Or we found a load of silver, so everything's cheaper for a round. Yeah, but then next round, the town's really more popular, so everything goes up by three. Mm-hmm.
Dynamic economy systems are amazing. I think they're fantastic. The one in Wasteland Express, I always loved as well. That's a great dynamic economy.
And it's not overcomplicated. No. It's just like, it just is a little bit of extra flavor managing the economy or timing your actions for the economy.
And it's great. And it's a historical theme based on the town in Czech Republic. So that's very interesting to me as well. It was rammed every single table.
We queued up for a while hoping to get a play, but it's a long game, right? Yes. And they were like, we'll come back in 2 hours, and we didn't.
Every time we walked past, it's just full of people.
It was always full.
I think I only got ink tips later on the Sunday.
They only had a couple of tables, I think. Or one copy? Yeah. It might have only been one copy.
Three, I think. Because there was one, I think I messaged one of you guys as I was sat down to play, like, there's a space just opened up, come now if you want.
I was on the far side of the convention hall at the time.
Simon, what's your number one?
I'm going to cheat.
He's going to pick something else.
Stop me. There's two art-based games which I'm kind of intrigued. One being Art Society from Mighty Boards. The other being The Art Project from, well, at least in the UK, it's going to come out through Hachette Board Games.
Art Project looks good.
They look so good. Art Society sees you collecting art pieces across a range of different styles.
The Horrible Guild.
No, Mighty Boards.
Mighty Boards, sorry, yeah.
Guys who did Hamlet and so on. So you're curating your own collection of art pieces across a range of genres and then kind of filling up your gallery. I'm not entirely sure how the scoring works in that regard, but at the very least, it's got a very strong aesthetic. They've got six dedicated artists who've made over 100 art pieces for this game.
Wow, that's amazing.
And you collect them. Anything that isn't bought by one of the players for their own personal curation ends up in the museum, which will then change how the whole kind of scale of cost works. They're like, oh, well, you're focusing on, say, Impressionists. Impressionists may or may not be the most lucrative art style at the end of the game. Someone else might have gone with Cubism or Modern yeah. Art or something. And so you're kind of working out where the trend's going to go throughout the game and what might be the best scoring by the time everything ends. So
it does, like, it turns the economy of art collection into a game mechanism, which is interesting, isn't it? Right. Like, it looks fascinating. That one looks great.
It looks really cool. The other one, the art project, this one has artwork by Vincent Detrait. We're going to have
Vincent
Detrait.
Yep.
And this is you working cooperatively with players as part of the art recovery team, the ART, hence art project. And you're chasing this art theft across the globe, trying to work out clues. On first look, it's given me a degree of mind management.
Okay.
Look. It might just be a visual thing, but you're kind of working out these clues as to what the White Hand have done, where they've been, what trades they might have done, and so on. So it looked really fascinating. Yeah. So I've got a double art one for for my top picks. Yeah, and I say it's not really top picks. This is a list of five out of all of the things I see.
A list of five things that are interesting.
My number one was Unconscious Mind by Fantasia Games. So I'll give you a honourable mention, which isn't really in this spot, but interests me anyway. And that is, I'm sure you've all seen it, it's probably one of the hottest games, which is The White Castle by De Vere.
White Castle. It looks really interesting.
I'll mock myself. I mock you for heavyweight Euro games. I have midweight games that play in under an hour. So midweight Euros, hour.
We've got a niche.
I've got a niche. There's things I like. The art style immediately gave me vibes of Iki.
It reminds me of Iki.
Straight away. But it uses dice workers, which I already kind of liked that idea from Scholars of the South Tigris. So I like the idea of that. It has little samurai meeples, which is cool. So
the meeples are really cute.
Yeah, really cute.
They're really cool.
And you are essentially warring clans trying to score more victory points via control over the White Castle. It's a Euro-type game. A little bit of resource management. A little bit of dice placement. Really cool. You've got these sort of bridges on the left side of the board, which have dice on them.
They're really interesting mechanic. Yeah,
yeah, and you're picking one of the dice from either from the left or from the right.
You can only take either of the outermost dice.
That's right, that's right.
So the dice that are in the middle of the bridge, you have to work your way towards.
Correct. Yeah. And you'll take the dice and you'll put the dice on one of the spots on the board as a dice worker. And if it's a value higher than what the spot says, then you'll get something. And if it's lower than what the spot says, then you'll have to pay something. And you can only place the certain coloured dice on certain coloured spots, which also will force you to take certain dice or certain values. So it looks like a really interesting little game.
Super interesting. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it.
It's actually the successor of The Red Cathedral.
The Red Cathedral, that's right. Same designer.
Same mechanic-ish. Different setting, because one was Russia and this is in Japan.
I've never played the Red Cathedral either, but I've heard good things about it.
But yeah, very highly rated game. So yeah, and this one is very highly rated, even before coming out. So yes.
So this one looks interesting. So that will be my sort of placeholder number one. It was a very narrow out of the top five. The White Castle.
That's good. Right. I'm kind of surprised you didn't mention Voidfall.
I didn't mention Voidfall.
Just keep going and look over it.
I'm surprised you didn't mention Voidfall.
It was on the honourable mention.
I'm surprised it's still not out yet.
I'm not going to buy it. I've got both Eclipse Second Dawn and TI4. I don't need another giant 4X space game.
This is exactly the same reason I have Fractal coming. I have no reason for me to want to go and see Voidfall. I mean, it looks great, but also, apparently, that game is long as all balls. It's like 4 hours long, and that immediately turns me off.
I think last year was very close to pledge for it, and it put me off the length, because I was like, at that point,
I'm never going to play.
Kind of game, I know that.
If you're going to invest the whole day, play TI.
Yeah, yeah. Even if this is the new and hot, I'm quite sure there's not going to be at the level of TI.
There's got to be that sweet spot between how much these epic games cost versus how much playtime you're genuinely going to get out of it. If you're going to struggle to ever get the group to play it with you, there's kind of no point. Which is a shame in a way, because you don't want people to kind of curtail their own ambition for what they want to design. But
it's why all of my picks are basically under 2 hours, because that's the games that I like these days, because I'm more likely to get them to the table.
Yeah.
Because Matt, as you've noticed, when you come round my house for games, I'm like, we're going to bust out a few
games.
Yeah,
well... Yeah.
So play stuff as quickly as possible. Try and get some variety.
Yeah, exactly. Get some variety in there. But
that's why the other game, the Last Light, that yes. was quite more interesting because it's like still a 4X, still kind of, but in a much smaller scale.
Oh, that was the one with the like rotating. The rings, yeah. right?
But that's
yes.
not going to be there. I'm surprised no, it's not going to be there.
Is it not?
No.
No.
Is it still in production or something?
I don't know. I think it's being delivered. It's being fulfilled right now, I think.
Okay.
Well, I didn't know until today because I was looking it up on the way here. It's designed by Roy Cannaday, who's the Dice Tower editor.
That's right.
And it's his first release, and this is why Dice Tower are kind of going nuts for it, and understandably and rightfully so. Disappointing that's not going to be there because I was looking forward to that.
At least it's not on the list of the big Geek Spiel list, so who knows?
Is it publishing through Dice Tower?
No,
themselves?
Through I can't remember.
Well, Dice Tower was going to have a stand.
Well, Dice Tower
they were there
in
they
a
were
sense
there,
last
so,
year with a
yeah.
shared presence, weren't they?
It was more of like a meet and greet and
they
signings
a stand
and
with
It was published or is going to be published by Grey Fox Games.
Oh, that's right.
Grey Fox did...
Grey Fox did Tsukiyomi, the reprint.
Tsukiyomi, and they did... Or they brought to the UK Deception Murder in Hong Kong and a number of other games. But I think they had some controversy as well recently for some reason. I can't remember why. Something about fulfillment. Couldn't remember. Mm. Not necessarily for this game, but anyway. Any other honourable mentions that you want to maybe spit out? Anything that comes to mind?
I do have one.
Okay.
That it's not something I will normally go for.
Italian designer?
It's a solo player game. I'm not a big fan of solo player board games.
Yeah.
I always think like, I'll probably play a video game if I'm alone. Because I think that probably brings a lot of people into board games is just like sharing the experience all together. So
I agree.
I never really... But this game is a pinball simulator and it's called Freaky Frogs from Outer Space. the artwork is absolutely bonkers. I love it. And you basically... You're playing pinball on a board game. That sounds just completely like... It looks cool. You got your map and then your set of cards is like what you can do instead of like pressing the buttons.
Okay, so that's your influences from a card.
You can do combos because you can like one card is like your right flip going up and then you can play the bumpers and you can play the multiplier.
So that reminds me of Skate Summer.
Wicked.
A theme that you never would have thought to see on cards.
Yeah.
Skateboard tricks and balance represented.
A bit more involved, I suppose.
Cool. Yeah. I think this is kind of like that. It's not completely out of...
Yeah. Combo building, but representing playing pinball.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
But have a look at the artwork. It's just like...
Sounds bonkers, mate. Any other honourable mentions? Gentlemen,
I've already covered a couple of my honourable mentions where we've overlapped. So,
There's Flo from the designer of Parks and Cosmoctopus coming out via Pico, which is an imprint on Fantasia Games.
Parks is a great game.
So Flo looks really interesting. Bit of tile exploration. I pinged to you guys in the week. Like, I've got a very strong theme emerging here, which is tile exploration. So between Emerge and Cascadia and Flow.
Are you like a tile laying?
I do like that kind of thing. Last night we just mentioned, interesting that that's not going to be there. Mm. I saw one listed called Galaxy Postman, which just looks like this neon cool thing. It's kind of a pick up or deliver game with a dice pool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dark Omen we've mentioned.
Yep.
Game Brewer I got Oak from last year. They've got a couple of interesting titles. Amygdala, which is the Kramer Kiesling crossover game.
Yes.
Another one kind of delving into the psyche of the brain. They've also got, let me double check, Trolls and Princesses is kind of like a fantasy type game, which looks kind of interesting. Randy Flynn, designer of Cascadia, also had Tabriz.
Yes, I saw that.
I think that's going to be there at least to play. I think
I saw the Kickstarter, I think.
Yeah, I was looking into Kickstarter. Didn't back it, but interested to see that in person. We've got our mates Rebellion are going to be there, Rebellion Unplugged.
Mm.
So have another look at Joyride, see what they're...
I think the Kickstarter's closed now, right?
Yeah,
Pledge Game Found Kickstarter,
manager,
whatever.
The Pledge Manager.
Pledge Manager will be open soonish and Late Pledge will be available, so I'd recommend having a look at that. and Archon Studio. I'm always going to mention Archon Studio because I think they're great. They've got yet another terrain type Kickstarter coming out, so they'll have some hopefully early access look at that.
Yeah, but if also, you want terrain for your D&D or your wargaming, that's the place.
They've also got some really, really strong IP-based board game content. I've mentioned before, they've got the Master of the Universe license for all of Europe. Yeah. So they've got their skirmish game and their kind of bigger board game of that.
Fields of Eternium, the other
Fields
one?
Fields of Eternium, yeah.
Two that came out last
year. Two are very close together, yeah.
And they were two different publishers.
One's basically a miniatures skirmish game, and the other is a board game that just happens to have miniatures.
Yeah. Yes. The other one, that you say two different publishers. The other one is Simon.
Oh, yeah, the other one was Simon. Yeah,
they have the American license, and bizarrely, two games developed in parallel.
Yeah. So weird.
Because the license is split between US and Europe.
There must have been something about He-Man's license becoming easier to get hold of or becoming available at the same time, because suddenly they had multiple publishers jump on it at the same time.
Well, if you think that normally that things goes every 25 years, if I'm right, because it's the same reason why 2 years ago HeroQuest re-released, because the
previous license expires and suddenly everyone can grab it.
The original license was with MB back in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
Because MB bought it from Games Workshop. They split. MB got it for Europe, and then MB doesn't exist. Like, no. It ceased to exist like in mid-90s, but still they still had the license. Mm-hmm. And then on the 25th year, when the license finished, boom, you got all the new HeroQuest stuff.
Funny how it works, isn't it? Archon also have the license for the Heroes of Might and Magic 3 board game, which is looking
epic.
They've done this enormous.
Yeah, what you think about it?
I saw a couple of the miniatures.
So here's the thing: I only know Heroes of Might and Magic by kind of
PC game.
I've never played it. I just kind of know it as a thing that exists. I used to sell copies of it in the shop.
They were great games back in the day, but I haven't played one in 15 years.
It looks like such
more than that.
Looks like such a strong faction based. Fantasy game with these two layers of combat. There's kind of like this grand scale, and then you can get down onto an entirely separate board, almost like a separate game, this actual skirmish level. It seems to be Archon's thing. They've got like grander scale and then smaller scale skirmish. It just looks fantastic.
Yeah, the idea is you sort of roll around the board, and when you engage in combat with someone, you then play out the combat, because your character on the board represents your like hero, and they have trailing around behind them like a little army. When you get into a combat, you then deploy that army and fight with that army.
It's really cool, which is
basically how Heroes of Might and Magic worked.
Yeah, and the fans of the series are getting super excited about the new factions that they've announced as one of the add-ons.
Some of the miniatures look really cool. I mean, the box that's the size of a small child.
Oh, yeah, it's enormous. It's a Kallax breaker, They had a demo of it at UKG, and I just simply didn't find the time for it. So I'm going to try and make time to give it a go and kind of see if it's something I'm going to be interested in further down the line.
I'll chuck in just a couple more honourable mentions. I won't spend too long on them. One is Sancori, which is Osprey Games' new one.
Yes, we saw a tiny bit of that.
Tiny snippet of it at UKG. The production looks freaking stunning. And it's kind of like their Crescent Moon, like in that same vein of games. And the heavy Euro work placement, area control, contract fulfillment. So I've got some tech trees in there as well. I like all of these things. It's not in my top five because apparently it's 150 to 180 minutes.
Ooh,
so it's at least a 3 hour.
A little bit too much.
It's a bit, I'll probably enjoy it, but it's not a game I would probably get to the table much. But the theme looks interesting. Nice historical theme. Production looks wonderful.
Osprey had General Orders as well.
General Orders,
which is a tiny box, which looked great.
Yeah, so that's on my wider list of things to check out. And then finally, was one called From the Moon, which is by Ioannis Gupi, who did Orichalcum, which is one of my favorite games from this year.
I was going to say, I couldn't remember the name of the designer. Yeah.
So he did, and I freaking love Orichalcum, so I'm dead keen to check that out. Plays in about 90 minutes. And again, only reason it's not in my top five is I've got a bunch of space games. It's another space game.
You do have a bunch of space games.
I do, so I'm trying not to get so many space games. So there is that. But it looks great. So
it does look great.
I'll check that one out as well. So those are my bigger honourable mentions. And then I've got like another list of like 20 games to go and check out at some point. But this podcast would be like 3 hours long. I can't be doing that. Anything else, chaps?
There's a few. I mean, I'm kind of developing our presence in the wider board gaming community as much as we're able to. So I'm hoping to see some of the people that we follow or we have previously met. We'll be wearing our bright red lanyards with Board Stupid on. So do look out for us if you are going to Essen. We'd be loved to have a little chat with you, see what you're excited to play or buy.
Let us know. Matt, I'll ask you, have you got any predefined expectations of what the event might be like?
Busy.
That's exactly right.
Yes, yeah. I think it's going to be busy. It's going to be a lot of queues, but that's what we like to do. And
the good thing is that although it is busy, if you can't get a table at the game that you want to play right then, there are hundreds of other options. Yeah. You can just wander around.
Right next door.
If there's a spot on something, just jump on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably. And I'm really afraid about my credit card. that is just like...
It's going to get pounded, mate.
Yeah. It's one of those things that you're coming back and not look at your bank statement for a few months.
There were people going around literally with like carts that they were towing.
They had trolleys,
With just... dozens and dozens and dozens of games in them.
I suppose it's worth us pointing out a couple of hints for anyone that might be listening and going for the first time, and therefore for yourself, Matt. Very much worth downloading the app for Spiel. Very helpful.
The map's great.
Gives you a guidance, like, direct me to here from where I am.
I was playing around last night, and you can like, oh, I'm here, I wanted to go there. And
really good.
And super good.
No, you can like map all the stuff that you want to see, and it looks very well
stuff.
Done. Well
you can
done to the organizer.
Search by the game or search by the developer if you know one or the other. Also worth taking a bit of cash because we found that a number of stands were cash only.
Even the larger ones,
as well as the indie, the little people selling their attic stuff. It's like,
take cash. Yeah. Which was completely weird for us going from UKG, which everything is cards, but take cash.
And I think they were having a problem, like the cash points were not functioning. There was like one set of functioning cash points that were at the very, very,
outside
very,
almost.
Very far end of the convention centre. So if you didn't have cash, it would be like a 30-minute schlep to go and get cash.
Yeah, get cash before you get to the convention, that's for sure. I think we'll wrap it up there then.
Yeah.
So we can play some games.
I'm well excited.
Yeah, me too.
I'm glad I got to go. It was a last minute decision for me. So.
Yeah, exactly. Was it gash rebate?
I mean, I don't know if the listeners want to know, but yeah, my gas got cut off at the last minute for a leak. A week later, it got turned back on, and apparently that's lucrative. So thanks very much, EDF. I'm going to Germany.
Well, thank you very much. Well, thanks for listening to Board Stupid. Subscribe to us for updates and to get future episodes of the show delivered directly to your ear holes via your favourite podcast service. You can find us on Facebook and on our Instagram, run by Lovely Sinem. Please go check out all of the lovely pictures. And everywhere you can find your favourite podcasts and on YouTube. And stay tuned. Got some stuff coming up on YouTube. We're going to make much more emphasis on that. I've got Matt on board to be the creative director. He doesn't know yet. we're going to play around with some stuff in the future for the YouTube channel. Now I've moved house and settled down. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again real soon.
We're on our way to Essen.